Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 204 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and suicide that affects her life. This is going to be an amazing show, and I know it's going to resonate with so many of you out there. But before we begin, I just want you to know that this episode is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils, customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. Now, here's your first official reminder to click on iTunes after this episode to rate and review the show, because I sit here with my team and we can't wait to hear from you. We thrive on your feedback. It's true. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
You know, I can't open up my iPad every morning without seeing yet another story about suicide, and people of all ages. It's staggering. Here are some facts. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. I know what you're saying. Say what? Yeah, what happened to cancer and all the rest of it? 10th. In 2017, there were an estimated 1,300,000 suicide attempts, and 47,173 Americans who died by suicide. That's an average of 129 suicides per day. Absolutely blows my mind. So when I heard that my wonderful colleague, Jennifer Ashton, who is the chief medical correspondent of ABC News, wrote a book entitled Life After Suicide, Finding Courage, Comfort, and Community After Unthinkable Loss, I just sucked my breath in and I said, oh my God, she's going to tell her story. Dr. Ashton experienced this type of tragedy in her own life. And so many of you hear from her, read her blog and Cosmo, on and on, but we all know her as a chief medical correspondent whose job it is to translate complex science. But in this case, she's wearing a different hat. She's talking about her own life and her own experience. Jennifer, welcome to the Her Podcast.
Pam, thank you so much for having me. And it's a mutual fan club. I'm such a big fan of yours, and I'm excited to have this important talk with you.
I couldn't wait for this. And when this comes out, I'm just spinning the hell out of it because everyone needs to hear this. If you don't know, if you don't mind, I'm going to go ahead and read the very first part of your book because it kind of says it all. After Suicide is a book I could never have imagined writing, let alone from personal experience. It's taken me a year and a half to be able to offer a book that's focused on the life part of the title rather than the suicide. A book about my family's journey toward healing after a sudden, devastating tragedy. And I'm eternally grateful to add a book about other suicide survivors' journeys as well. This is a book about hope and strength and resilience and growth and how, with a lot of help and love, we found our way out of a darkness I was sometimes afraid might swallow us whole. And there it was. The national headlines read, Surgeon Jumps to His Death After Divorce from TV Personality Wife. The surgeon was Dr. Robert Ashton, a brilliant thoracic specialist. I am the TV personality wife. Oh, Jennifer, What did it take to write this book?
A lot of therapy.
Good
Pam,
God.
I mean, it was, I think to understand why and how I wrote the book, we have to go back a little bit. And as doctors and as scientists, you know, like we like to do that because we do our detective work, so to speak, when we do that. But, you know, I guess the place to start is that it's easier for me to be the one helping than the one asking for help. It's easier for me to be the one trying to heal someone than the one needing to be healed. And when Rob killed himself just 18 days after our amicable and mutual divorce, it was a national headline. And so not only was it the biggest tragedy and trauma that myself and my teenage children could possibly go through, but we had to go through it in the public spotlight, which, believe it or not, even though it sounds so much worse, you know, as anyone who's ever gone through, you know, a loss or trauma like this can probably say, we were already at our saturation point for grief and pain. So it really didn't make it worse. It just kind of brought an additional spotlight to this issue, which we didn't expect to have to deal with personally. So, you know, as I started to try to recover, and my focus being on my children, as any mother's focus is, I kind of went back to the healer role rather than the one needing to be healed. And I just thought, let me focus on helping heal my children, having them heal and recover, going back to my job, and, you know, try to just deal with this very, very privately. Because, you know, despite the fact that I have this very public profile and platform, as I said, it's easier for me to talk about someone else or something else than to talk about myself. So we see that a lot, right, in patients. So I did just that. I went back to my public career. I went back to seeing patients. I focused on my kids. And it wasn't until over a year later, which was now June of last year, when Kate Spade's suicide made national news. You remember it, Pam. I'm sure you talked about it.
Oh, gosh,
everyone
yes.
was talking about it, right? Horrible.
Oh, yeah.
And Good Morning America asked me if I would feel comfortable talking about it on the air. And I said, well, I'm not a mental health expert. I'm a woman's health expert. I said, but the only way that I'll agree to talk about it is if I just speak about my own experience, and I will only do that if it's okay with my children. And I swear to you, Pam, I was praying and hoping that my kids would say, please don't.
I hear you.
Say, right? Like, I was really hoping that they would kind of give me the out. And of course, what do we know as mothers, you know, about our kids? They're our teachers, right? As much as we like to think that we teach them, they teach us. And so my kids said, Mom, you absolutely have to talk about this. You should talk about it. You have a platform that millions of people don't have. And so many people are going through what we're going through. And I thought, oh my God, like, are you kidding me? How am I going to do this? Because, Pam, even though this couldn't be further from the truth, what I've learned from having so much therapy is that part of the reason it was initially so hard for me to talk about Rob's suicide is that I had to totally bear my weakness, my pain, my vulnerability, my imperfections to the entire country. And I had gone 45 years of my life trying to avoid those things. So it was only in doing that that I realized two really critical things. And that's what got me to write this book. One is that I heard massive response from people who said, thank you for finally speaking for what we're living through. And I thought, oh my God, I'm not the only one, because it's so easy to think you're alone when you go through something like this. And the second thing was, it was to me, and I'm sure to you as a doctor, like dangling catnip in front of a cat when I heard that I could possibly help someone else, I would walk through fire to achieve that goal. And that's what I heard when I spoke about it on GMA for the first time. And so my kid said, well, congratulations, Mom. You talked about it on TV. Now you have to write a book. And I thought, oh, good Lord, have mercy. Like these kids, they ask for an inch and they take a mile, but they were right. And my kids and the people that I heard from gave me the strength to do it. And it was really, really hard.
You know, I'm just taking a breath here and just really kind of walking in your shoes as best I can for a moment. Suicide, you know, affects just about everybody when you think about it, one way or the other. You know, when I was in medical school, you know, one of the top surgeons, one of the most brilliant people I have ever met in my life. He was truly a mentor. I just loved him. You know, while I was there, he killed himself. And I'm just sitting there as a young person going, what? And as so many people do, they ask the question, why? What drives someone to do something like that? Sometimes it's unfathomable. You just, you know, out of the blue, boom. Right. And other times, I mean, God knows, you know, today we have suicide bombers and, you know, whatever. But, you know, it's just so hard. It's so funny. I was thinking about David Foster Wallace the other day. Right. And what happened with him, you know, one of the greatest writers of all time and, you know, so young. But, you know, he had a long, long history of very severe depression, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I think pieces of us try desperately to comfort ourselves with kind of a why thing, like, well, you know, we figured it out. But sometimes you can't.
Right.
Did you find yourself doing
that
too?
Yeah, of course. I mean, initially, and it almost seems like a different lifetime ago that I was having those thoughts, Pam, because, you know, what I quickly realized is that the person who has the answers to those thoughts is not here anymore. So I'll never know the answer. You know, of course, part of my kind of criteria for writing my book, Life After Suicide, was that I tried to minimally, if not at all, go back in time because I said, listen, I don't, Rob's not here anymore. I don't want to speculate. It's not, I'm not in the world of, you know, psychiatry or psychology. So I can't speak to prevention. That's a very, very important part of this issue and this dialogue. But as you said, you know, in describing the book, I wanted the focus to be on the life of the people who are left behind because that is, you know, over 24 million people in just the last 4 years alone, which is a huge, huge number of people. And so, you know, I'm learning every day. I'm on this path, just like more than 25 million other people are too. But, you know, I spoke to like 10 other survivors for the book, Pam, and their stories inspired me. And I hope that this book will start a dialogue that we desperately need to have in this country, because as you know, sometimes when you can't see something like mental illness, we tend to think of it less seriously than something you can see, like, you know, cancer or a broken leg or something like that. And the people who are left, you know, to live after the death of a loved one by suicide, you know, it's a different kind of death. It's a different kind of grief. And so I felt an obligation to use the platform I have to at least kind of open that conversation up a little bit.
Well, Jennifer, there's an astounding statistic that you shared with me prior to our broadcast. And that is the number of people who are actually affected on average when someone does commit suicide. What's that number?
Yeah. So the CDC, the last estimates on suicide that the CDC have released are about a year and a half or almost 2 years old, 2017, over 47,000 deaths by suicide in the country. And it's estimated that for every death by suicide, 135 people are directly affected. So that would be like you as a medical student traumatized by the death of that surgeon that you admired. That would be coworkers, relatives, friends, family. I mean, so that if you crunch those numbers, that's more than 6 million people a year over just the last 4 years alone, more than 24 million people. And if you just go back in time, you're literally talking about a staggering number of people who know someone who's died by suicide. And those people, you know, have a lot to deal with. And so when I heard that number, I just couldn't believe it.
I mean, you know, I think about that, and that number just sticks with me because I think about that surgeon. You know, it's so funny. It's almost like it was yesterday in many respects, because I respected him and I so admired him, and I will always cherish my memories with him in the operating room. But I think of all the students that were affected. I mean, wow, it wasn't just me by any means. I mean, he was mentoring a boatload of us and all the colleagues. You're absolutely correct. Here's something that's interesting, too. You had provided some other statistics that are really kind of like, whoa, you know, our female listening audience needs to understand that at least by the 2017 stats from the CDC, men died by suicide 3.5 times more often than women, and the rate of suicide is highest in middle age, white men in particular, just like the surgeon I knew and like your husband.
Yeah.
And what's going on?
And I think also, you know, in medicine, we tend to, you know, first when we look at an issue, we collect data, right? And we make observations. And, you know, that helps us kind of narrow our field of vision, you know, to where it's most kind of effectively used. And when you look at suicide, you know, there are certain groups that are at higher risk, meaning they die by suicide more than other groups. And those groups are physicians, veterans, LGBTQ youth and young adults. I mean, you know, that's a major. So right there, it allows us to kind of take a closer look and say, what is it about these groups that's increasing their risk? And can we do something to prevent it? And as I said, you know, I don't really speak in the book on prevention because that's not my forte and I'm not qualified to speak about that. I'm only qualified to talk about what my family and I have been going through in the last 2 years and 4 months since suicide hit our family like, you know, like a freight train. And I think that, you know, how in medicine we hear often, actually, just, you know, even in popular culture, about people who are diagnosed with cancer, and they say, I didn't really start living until I got the diagnosis, right? And I would always hear that and kind of say, I feel like I know what they're talking about, but I don't feel like I'm living like they're living, right? After Rob died by suicide, my children and I now live like that. We live with an appreciation for the preciousness of life, and a way that honors Rob's spirit that allows us to find joy and happiness and purpose in our life and feel sad because he's not here anymore at the same time. One feeling doesn't negate the other. It's this concept called multiple truth. And that was something that I really wanted to share with people because it surprised me that all three of us were experiencing that. And it was only when I asked other survivors about it that I learned that you can actually have something called post-traumatic growth and not have something like this destroy you. And that's information that I want everyone who's suffering from this to know.
Go to the place of post-traumatic growth. That is a fascinating phrase because all we ever hear is, you know, post-traumatic stress syndrome, which is sort of the you know, other end of the spectrum. Talk to us. What did you learn, Jennifer, when you talk to these survivors? And the interviews are absolutely wonderful. They're rich.
Aren't they?
There's joy in them. There's there's reality. There's, you know, it's just the full spectrum of the human experience. What did you learn that might be some nuggets to share with our Her podcast audience about this post-traumatic growth?
Well, first of all, I learned that term from a woman who shares her story in the book called Kim Rocco. And she's the surviving wife of a decorated Marine who died by suicide. And she is the vice president of a military organization called TAPS, T-A-P-S, which stands for Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors. And she taught me that term. And what that is not only a phenomenon, but it's their goal at TAPS, because they are charged with helping people, military families who have been through this severe trauma. You know, they don't want them to become more statistics and more examples of trauma. So when they talk about post-traumatic growth, Pam, what they mean is that a trauma has the potential to either, you can look at it like a fork in the road. And if you go one way, you can go down the road of more trauma, the PTSD. If you go another way, you can go down the road of post-traumatic growth. And they have various pillars to that concept, but one of them is a spiritual or faith-based connection for some people. One of them is helping others. So being involved in a mentoring program or a support group, or, you know, just doing something that helps someone else is a vehicle for post-traumatic growth. Stabilizing the individual or the family or circle who's been traumatized, which is a process that occurs in the acute period of shock and grief. And, you know, they have some other aspects, which I can't remember right now, but she speaks about that in a way that is so compelling and impactful. And it makes people understand that they can go through this kind of pain, but they don't have to suffer. So when you talk about one of the nuggets I've learned from other survivors and from therapists, it's none of us get through life without pain. Pain is part of life, but processing that pain and how we allow it to either help us grow or not is the key. And pain is unavoidable, but suffering is optional. And that's like a great example of it, is Kim's story. So, you know, her part of the book is I think one of the most powerful.
I love this. I mean, it's just, we hear it all the time. It's a little bit, you know, sometimes cliched. It's like, you know, the suffering is optional, all the rest of it. You know, we see this sort of generically out there. We're like, well, okay. And then boom, we have a tragedy like this at this level, at this level. Now you know, of course you're going to feel pain. You know, I always remember, you know, the Darwinian phrase, and that is, it's not the strongest, nor is it the smartest who survive. It's those who can adapt who survive. And at the end of the day, post-traumatic growth is all about some form of unique, customized to you, adaptation to what took place. But the adaptation is a positive one. You're going to enfold all of this experience into your life and then move on. And what does that really look like? That's why I just love this phrase. When I read it, it hit me. It's like, why have we never seen the other side of this? That's why I love your book, because it's filled with these kinds of nuggets. What else, you know, from another interview, did you learn in terms of another nugget, some kind of a story or a way of adapting that might be able to give people out there a little bit more hope when they've been hit with something like this at whatever level?
Well, one of them was a story of a woman whose mother had died by suicide when she was 17. And when she, and she didn't, you know, she was so young, and it was like over 40 years ago, 35 years ago when it happened. And so the access or the focus on therapy wasn't as, you know, as it is today, even though today it certainly could be even better. And so she really didn't get therapy for like 30 years. And she tells a story of how it eventually kind of resurfaced. And that's this concept called complicated grief, which I learned also from our therapist, which is basically, as she puts it, if you resist, it will persist. And so, you know, by not dealing with it, initially, she's kind of barricaded it up in a place that she thought it would, you know, just stay all nice and neat. And that, as we know, usually doesn't work. So it was kind of an example of how dealing with this kind of trauma, with professional help, whether that's an online support group or books or personal therapy or you name it, is so essential. Otherwise, it's just going to come out at when you least expect it and probably when you least want it to.
Wow. I love that whole, again, another nugget. If you resist, you know, you'll persist. Mm-hmm. It'll stay in your life until you really sit down.
Yep.
You know, I've worked a lot with addiction in the addiction mm-hmm. world at multiple levels. And I was actually amazed, Jennifer, when I first came on board. I was working with probably one of the world's experts on it. She wrote Complex Trauma, the textbook, and that's Dr. Mm-hmm. Christine Courtois. And mm-hmm. her book is ridiculously extraordinary. And our mm-hmm. job as a team, and she was part of it, was to really begin to infuse what we call trauma-based therapy, so that people can really put it on the table, look at it, confront it, and mm-hmm. no longer resist. I was amazed, actually astounded, how long it's taken for mental health professionals and others to really begin to embrace this whole trauma-based issue. And I'm thrilled to see now that people are putting it out there and that you now have trauma therapists and you have people who really mm-hmm. have that unique training. I mean, I just wrote the foreword to a book on yoga for trauma by the founder of, you know, the biggest teacher group in yoga. How beautiful is that? I mean, you have to remember when you walk up to someone.
That's amazing.
Oh, isn't that the best idea ever? I mean, you know, people don't realize, you know, yoga instructors are always walking up to members of their class and, you know, like rearranging their limbs and whatever. If you've had child abuse, if you had sexual abuse, if you had any kind of physical abuse, you know, that can trigger them in 5 seconds if it takes that long. And you don't know that until you're trained. So now they're training them to be more sensitive and actually have a higher level of awareness and knowledge mm-hmm. about this. Isn't that the coolest? I mean, I really love that.
That's amazing. That is incredible.
Well, so, you know, here you are. You wrote this book. You know, there's this piece at the very end. I'm going to read again because, you know, quite frankly, I could just read this whole damn thing out loud, but we'd be here until next week. as for me, writing this book has been an extraordinary experience. It was initially intended to be a message of hope and healing for suicide survivors. Turned out to be much more than that for me. Very painful to work on and very therapeutic. An exercise in total honesty without hiding and an opportunity to get to know the brave, amazing fellow survivors who generously shared their stories, not just for me, but for you as well. I'm humbled by them, so grateful and proud to be one of them. Please take it from us. You're not alone. We know what you're going through because we've been there. We know you're going to make it out of the darkness because we've been on that journey too. Many of us are still finding our way, but in the end, we're all in this together. Together, we can help one another heal. I love that. And it's, you know, the question, what were you hoping to accomplish by writing this book? I think that kind of says it, doesn't it, Jennifer?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does. And I know that, you know, not everyone who's going through this process can write a book or wants to write a book or can get one published, but anyone can journal. Anyone can write on their computer or, you know, in a diary and get their thoughts out, and or even just speak into your phone and record your thoughts. It was so therapeutic to do that, even though it was incredibly hard. But I think that for me as a doctor who has really tried my whole life to, you know, keep everything together and, to, let's face it, like avoid pain, right? I want to do that as a person. I want to do that as a doctor. I want to help my patients avoid pain. I want to help our viewers avoid pain. You know, again, like I said, I learned you have to feel if you want to heal. And so I had to confront my pain head on. And in doing so, I found that people reached out to help me. And then that fed on itself. And it led me to reach out more to help them. And it just became a domino effect of support and healing. And I think that given the numbers we spoke about, Pam, you know, that's tremendously powerful. And I also think that, you know, even though this couldn't be further from the truth, obviously, you know, people see things like you said, like the surgeon who died by suicide, you know, and looked like he just had, I'm sure, the perfect life. And I'm sure to a lot of people, it looked like, you know, if someone's on TV and, you know, that I had this perfect life. No one's life is perfect. And, you know, obviously my life wasn't perfect. My marriage ended, even though it was amicable. You know, that's not perfect, but no one's life is as it seems. And I think the other thing I wanted to accomplish with this book is just to say, you know what, we all have something. Let's stop with the smoke and mirrors and the filters and the ideal everything, and let's talk about every part of it, the good parts, the bad parts, the ugly parts, the pretty parts, because that's what real life is. And I think that's why my children and I feel like we're living a more authentic, more fulfilling life now, because as the saying goes, death is the ultimate educator. You know, having been through what we went through, we just feel like, you know, who we are is all of it. It's the good, the bad, the ugly, the crying, the laughing. It's all of it. And that's what story after story of these survivors in my book shared. And it was really, really inspiring. And I just hope that it inspires and comforts a lot of other people.
I don't think there's any question it's going to. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a fangirl, Jennifer, but also, no, seriously, I really think that the timing for this just couldn't have been better with all of this stuff going on now. And maybe this will be a moment of peace and solace for someone to be able to take a moment, deep breath, and realize there is post-traumatic growth. So there's a new phrase for everybody, and you could hold on to that with hope. Everyone, I have been having the utter pleasure and honor of talking with my wonderful colleague, Dr. Jennifer Ashton, the chief medical correspondent of ABC News, about her book, Life After Suicide, Finding Courage, Comfort, and Community After Unthinkable Loss. Run on over to her website, jenniferashtonmd.com, to learn more about her amazing work, if you're not glued to the TV watching her otherwise. And then most importantly, I want you to know that there is hope. And this book is really going to resonate with you. So please run on out and grab it now. If not for yourself, for someone you know whose life has been touched by this big time. Jennifer, I can't thank you enough for being on the Herb podcast.
Oh, I'm sending you a giant, giant hug. And people should know, all your listeners should know, that the proceeds from the book are going to benefit the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. And I hope that, listen, if this book makes it on the bestseller list, I don't get anything, but it sends a message to our entire country that we care about this issue, and it needs to come out of the shadows. So thank you, thank you, thank you, Pam.
Well, thank you for writing it. Kudos to you. Hang there for a second as I do the closer, because I have a couple other thoughts, too.
Okay.
Everyone out there, okay, you've just heard Dr. Jennifer Ashton talk about her new book. Come on. I want to hear what you think about it. Run on over to iTunes right now. Rate and review the show. I'm sitting here just tapping on my little desk, waiting to hear from you. Why? Because I'm Dr. Pam Peek. I'm host of the Herb Podcast. Follow me on Facebook at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every single episode of the Herb Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and stay well.